This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
Our goal is to compete and really put a fun team on the court that really gets after it.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
We're very talented. I mean, when we go out there and compete at a high level and give a lot of effort, we can be a good team.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What is up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and partner at Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as at Apollo HOU. And joining us to discuss what is going on with your Houston Rockets is none other than the Podfather himself, Rockets Wire editor, Mr. Ben DuBose. How's it going, Ben?
Pretty good, Jackson. How are you?
I'm in this, you know, awkward situation, right, where I want to say I'm doing great because the, you know, Cade Cunningham, pursuit is going strong, but what a painful way to lose that game against the Timberwolves, huh?
Yeah, comedic. To be outscored 22-0 over the final 7.5 minutes, to be only the fourth NBA team in the last 25 years. Think of all the games in 25 years of NBA basketball. Only four of them have had a team not score in the final 7.5 minutes of a game. Even by Rockets standards, that one is pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot to process, and we're going to talk about that coming up in the second segment. But first, Ben, let's start. I've already shared some of my thoughts, and apparently I'm a little bit more upbeat or positive about the Victor Oladipo situation, kind of how that has played out as a branch of the initial James Harden trade framework. So what are what's your reaction to this trade deadline or lackluster trade deadline where Rockets fans, seemingly got their hopes up a little bit, and, you know, it was a pretty disappointing return for Victor Oladipo?
Yeah, I'm disappointed, but I'm not angry. I think it's pretty clear if you watch Victor Oladipo over his 20 games in Houston and the team's performance over that 20 game span, of course, the historic losing streak, this was not the guy that was a two-time all-star in Indiana. And given, you know, not just his age, I think it's more just the serious nature of the quad injury. I wonder if he's ever going to get back to that. Unfortunately, that's just a brutal injury to recover from. And in my opinion, it was tough. If you actually watched Victor Oladipo, not just looking at his name, but looking at his performances with the Rockets, to justify getting a ton in return, especially with him about to become a free agent. Now, I do think it's fair to say that the Rockets expected more for him or from him when they traded for him in January. So it's okay to be frustrated by the fact that they clearly missed that evaluation. But I don't think it's reasonable to think they could have done a ton better at the deadline. There just wasn't, you know, the reasons that we've joked about anything to improve his trade value on Twitter are the same reasons that other teams weren't over the moon about trading for him, especially with him apparently being set on signing with Miami in the offseason. So I don't think it was so much a botched negotiation. It was just a weak hand that Rafael Stone had when it came to Victor Oladipo. So, you know, I'm not so much angry. I'm disappointed. Like, the deadline was the last chance, Jackson, for you to get something close to what you expected in January. Like, we all, in the back of our minds, I think we all just sort of thought, hey, maybe there's another team like the Rockets that would grade Victor Oladipo based on the fact that he's a two-time All-Star, the guy he was before the quad injury, and pay accordingly. Even though it wasn't likely, I think some of us held out, you know, a 10% hope that maybe the Rockets could recoup, if not all, at least some of what they invested in him, and it didn't happen. And so, you know, I'm disappointed, but again, I'm not angry, because I just don't think that in this position that Rafael Stone could have done a whole lot more. With that said, in January, you know, I think a lot of what's going on, people do overvalue the role of Oladipo in the Harden trade. He was a part of it, yes, but the vast majority of it was the picks, the future picks, the pick swaps, the draft equity, either with making those picks the Rockets themselves or using it as a trade package. But where I think a lot of fans, where I think there's sort of emerged as a disconnect, especially between the diehards and the casuals, the Rockets in this front office do not have a lot of sort of trust equity and that Rafael Stone is a brand new GM without much in the way of proven experience. Tillman Fertitta is a relatively new owner, and we know that he is not exactly at the top of approval list, either league-wide or among the fan base. And so when you can't point to anything tangible from the Harden trade, you know, leading up to it, a lot of us, we talked obviously about Ben Simmons. A lot of other deals, you know, Michael Porter Jr. we brought up a lot. This idea that they would have, you know, a combination of future picks and something young to tangibly build around, like the way the Thunder got SGA with the Paul George trade, although he was younger. The same with the Pelicans and Brandon Ingram during the Anthony Davis trade. And the Rockets right now, they don't really have that piece that you can point to and say, you know what, even though we're losing, here's why it's clearly going to get better. Here's someone that is clearly going to be a part of your next great team. Other than maybe, you know, you could argue Christian Wood and Kevin Porter Jr., and they were obviously not a part of the James Harden trade. So I just think the bottom line, when the Rockets made that trade to send James Harden to Brooklyn, I remember the Woj tweet talking about the historic haul of draft picks that Rafael Stone got in the deal, the four future first-round picks and the pick swaps. Well, it came at a cost. The cost of getting all those picks was that the Rockets did not get anything in the way of proven production. What limited they did have, you know, they sent Jared Allen to Cleveland for another pick. And instead of going the Philadelphia route where they would have gotten Ben Simmons and probably a couple of first-round picks or prospects, they didn't get anyone similar to Simmons. They went the route they could just maximize the pick haul with, you know, four future first, all these swaps. And the bottom line is Victor Oladipo was the one guy that fans knew that you could point to and say, hey, here's someone that's been a two-time All-Star before. This is a name brand that you should be familiar with. And even if he wasn't under contract long-term, even if there were questions in regards to his play, he was at least something that fans could point to and say, okay, this is something that should be at least useful for us, either on the court or maybe you can trade him down the line. Whereas now that Oladipo didn't pan out, even though he's just a small part of the Harden trade, he's a significant part psychologically for a lot of people, and that he's the one thing that you could actually see, that you could tangibly touch, if you will. Whereas now, you traded one of the top three players in the game, and you have nothing that's truly tangible. It's all about what could happen down the line with these draft picks, with using this draft capital on the trade market. Basically, the Rockets are telling you as a fan to say, trust us, we've got this. And maybe they do, but they're saying this, and they no longer have Daryl Morey, who's one of the top GMs in the game. There's no longer hashtag in Morey we trust. There's a brand new GM without much of a track record. There's an owner who does not have a strong approval rating, who's relatively new. And yet they're trying to ask fans to blindly trust them. And I think that's where sort of the lashing out comes. So as for me, I believe in Rafael Stone. I think the trade capital is pretty good. I'm willing to sort of let it play out. But at the same time, that's why I do understand the outrage, Jackson. I think the bottom line is that the fans, this has been such just an abrupt change. You know, as recently as the bubble, the Rockets were still trying to win a championship. They were all in on winning. To go from all in on winning with one of the top players in the game, a certain Hall of Famer, really a transcendent guy in James Harden, to just snap your fingers within a few months to one of the NBA's worst teams, a historic 20-game losing streak. And now, you know, there's really not even a true building block, at least from the trade. Again, I understand KPJ and Christian Wood, not meaning to slight them, but it's just a lot for Rockets fans to take. It's a lot of change. And basically, they're just asking you to believe that long-term, you know, these picks, that they're going to be able to use them the right way. And while, again, I trust that it will work out, it is a pretty big ask from the front office. And I understand why a lot of fans this week are sort of lashing out in the aftermath.
I'm right there with you, Ben. I mean, frankly, wow, Coughing in the podcast. That's dope. Good job, Jackson. Anyways, frankly, Ben, I'm right there with you. I think it's a very tall order for the front office and for the Rockets to, you know, expect a level of patience when they don't have a proven track record. But I have a follow-up point that I want to ask you about the original framework of the James Harden deal. Okay. And we're going to get there in just a moment after a message from our friends over at betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and NHL are all in full swing, and we've got MLB right around the corner. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. You can get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's 100% free to sign up. Head over to the website and sign up today to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit using promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose. So, Ben, here's my question for you. And I want to highlight, right, because you mentioned, you know, sending Jared Allen out to Cleveland to, you know, procure yet another first round draft pick as part of the original framework of the James Harden deal. I think it's very important. Beamathug on Twitter, David Weiner, highlighting the fact that, and many others have highlighted it as well as myself, but I think people kind of gets lost in translation. The Rockets didn't want to take back the Torian Prince contract. So you send Torian Prince, Jared Allen to Cleveland. Not only do you get back a first round draft pick, but you also don't have to then later on offload the contract of Torian Prince. But my question for you, Ben, is if you could go back, you have a magical, you know, time machine. If you could go back, hindsight being 2020, and take on Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and Torian Prince this season, and just, you know, so we lose out on the pick that was, you know, brought in from Cleveland. We make it a straight, you know, one for one with Brooklyn, and we bring back those players in exchange for, and then also the three first round picks as well as the four pick swaps. Do you do that deal and then hope to potentially flip some of those smaller pieces, or do you still roll the dice on Victor Oladipo?
If those are the only two options, then I would take LeVert and Allen and Prince and worry about the rest later. Because certainly Oladipo didn't leave you with much. Well, I suppose we shouldn't say it's nothing. You know, I do have some optimism for Avery Bradley. If he wants to be here, a good defender, only 30, a cheap team option for next year at $5.9 million. And then the pick swap between Miami and Brooklyn next year, that could move you up from, say, 28 to 20. That's not nothing. So while it's not nothing, but certainly, you know, given those options, then I think I would prefer, even though, you know, I've sort of mocked the LeVert MVP train on Twitter, I think it's better than what you got from Victor Oladipo. With that said, if I could sort of go back in time, what I would do is actually neither of those. I would look for a better trade partner for LeVert than the Pacers and Oladipo. And, you know, that's sort of tricky because, of course, we all know what ended up happening with LeVert and the kidney. So who knows? Maybe if you had a better partner, it would have gotten voided anyway. In some respects, you could say that the Pacers easily could have walked away from that deal when that was found during the physical process. So given that, who knows? But like in a perfect world where assuming the physicals work out and the team that's getting LeVert is willing to be patient as Indiana was, I don't think that the Rockets, especially because if you have LeVert and Allen, all it does is sort of keep you in this mediocrity. It's not really going to make you a true playoff contender by any stretch, but doesn't give you anywhere near the odds of a top pick that right now you're at 52%. I don't regret the Rockets not adding those guys. However, I do think it's clear that the Rockets overvalued Oladipo at this stage. So while, again, it's not so much that I want those guys from the Nets, but I would just go back in time and, you know, I'm curious what the other options were around the NBA for Caris LeVert rather than Victor Oladipo. Is there a way that hypothetically you could have gotten, say, a mid first round draft pick, something like that, rather than taking on Oladipo for the prospect of him being a name, a two-time All-Star? That's sort of the road that I would go down. but I don't consider it a huge mess. You know, it's something that, again, it clearly did not work out as the Rockets intended, but I think what kind of gets lost in translation is that that's only a very small part of the motivation for the Harden trade. Most of it is still up in the air. It depends on, obviously, what they do with those picks moving forward, and that's why, again, while disappointed, I don't see it as some franchise-altering or crippling thing the way some do.
Basically where I'm at, you know, because, again, Rafael Stone, Steven Silas, they wanted the opportunity to still be able to compete this season while also simultaneously remaining flexible down the line. And that's where I think there has been some pushback from Rockets fans where they look at, you know, LeVert, they look at Allen, and they're like, well, those guys could have helped you compete this season. And I think that there's some pushback on the Allen front where, you know, like it or not, the Rockets view Christian Wood as their five. They don't view him as a four to play alongside Jared Allen at the five. So that played into part of why they wanted to offload him, as well as the value received back and getting rid of the Torian Prince contract, the extra first, and then Caris LeVert for Victor Oladipo. They didn't want to be locked into Caris LeVert long term. They kind of did, you know, low risk, high reward with Victor Oladipo. And frankly, it didn't pan out. And so that's where we're at, is they knew the gamble when they, you know, did the trade, when they originally acquired Oladipo for Caris LeVert. They knew the risks associated with, you know, going after a guy who was still working his way back from injury, but the ceiling was there. You know, if he came back and he did, you know, have that return to form, the defensive upside of Victor Oladipo versus Caris LeVert, they thought they were going to be able to, you know, mesh really well in the backcourt alongside John Wall. It was all there. And unfortunately, we saw a very small sample size of it for six games where it looked really, really good. And then the injury started to mount. And then, you know, we just, now we're at this spot where we're fading for Cade. But I guess that's as good a spot as any to bring us to the Rockets' most recent misfortune, which was the utter collapse against the Timberwolves. Now, Ben, I went into this game, and I haven't actively cheered for a loss this season yet until this game, but I didn't want them to lose like this. Like, yeah. You know, I obviously the lottery implications are there with Minnesota. They play them two more times. They play them Saturday night. They play them once more near the tail end of April as well. But with Orlando having just unloaded its entire roster, you have to imagine that Orlando is going to, you know, be gaining speed in the tankathon race. And so for the Rockets to be able to finish bottom three, some of these crucial losses against the other bottom teams, Minnesota, the Pistons, which I think they're done with their season series against the Pistons, right? That one's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, some of these losses against the bottom tier teams are very, very important. But losing the way that they did, and that's what I tried to highlight on Twitter, is how you lose is so important. And they lost in a bad way in this game.
Yeah, I think the way I look at it, win or lose, whether you're a diehard tanker or you just sort of understand it, I think the one thing that we can agree on is you want to build the right habits. And that's the way I phrased it on Twitter. And that's what was so alarming last night. It's not just that they lost. I mean, if you're getting great shots and, you know, hashtag 0 for 27, you just miss them. Okay, that happens sometimes even at the worst times. But to see what happened late in that game, especially with John Wall, who's supposed to be a mentor for you, you know, sort of we've envisioned him, and I still think he can be. He's a very smart guy, you know, sort of a bridge into the next generation and sort of mentoring some of these younger players. To see everything that they did over the first 41 minutes of that game just devolve into just iso ball, hero ball with a guy in John Wall who really isn't even all that great as an isolation player. I mean, I guess he's the best creator they have on the roster right now. But the point is, there was absolutely nothing in the way of ball movement, nothing comparable to what they did that really built them that 16-point lead. And it's just, I guess the one silver lining, you didn't have Kevin Porter Jr. in that game. So maybe in terms of the guys that you're trying to build the right habits, it's not quite as devastating. But it's just one of those things where win or lose, I think you want to feel like you're building for something. And then to see that everything just goes to hell that quickly without really anyone on the floor down the stretch seeming to know what to do. Again, they went away from really getting Christian Wood involved in the pick and roll game. It's just frustrating. It's not so much that they lost, again, it's the way they lost. And if they lost by at least running the system that got them the lead, it would be easier to take. Whereas now it just sort of feels like, to me, you know, again, I understand that winning is not the top priority for the organization right now, but someone needs to have a heart-to-heart with John Wall and just be able to explain, hey, I get the frustration. I know how proud you are, but bro, you're on tilt at the moment. Take a step back, breathe. You're not going to be able to fix the situation with one game, even if you do win it in an epic way. What matters at this point is building for the future. Whether we're talking about the lottery or not, you need to have some organic growth, players getting better. And the way they played late in that game is just not at all conducive to players getting better. And hopefully that's the lesson that gets taken out of it.
I had to stifle some laughter over here, Ben, because I traditionally only hear the phrase on tilt when playing League of Legends. So that had me chuckling a little bit over here. But you're absolutely right. You know, and I do worry that down the line, the future of this Rockets team, you know, the next, you know, the remainder of this season, next season, you know, John Wall is probably going to be a mainstay because you envision it's really hard to move that Supermax contract. But hey, never say never, right? Maybe throw in a few pick swaps and some picks and we can get back, you know, I don't know who's the step down from John Wall, because we go CP3 to Westbrook and now we go John. Yeah. So no, I won't put that evil on us, but legitimately, you imagine he's a mainstay moving forward for this team. And I worry, you know, we've talked a lot about Christian Wood's happiness, right? And yeah, you know, really convincing him that the Rockets are a team to stay with long term after this initial deal runs its course. And I worry that, you know, the relationship between John Wall and Christian Wood, if John doesn't sit down and have that heart to heart with somebody, Silas Stone, yeah, whoever it needs to be, to realize he's not that guy anymore and that he needs to defer and involve Christian Wood more, I worry that that could be harmful towards, you know, retaining Christian Wood long term.
I thought it was extremely clear, by the way, when Christian Wood had that quote after the Oklahoma City game of "we're not playing together." Of course he was talking about John Wall.
Yeah.
Who else could he be talking about? I mean, we saw what happened late in that game, and to an extent it happened in Minnesota as well. The hero ball, not getting Christian Wood involved in the pick and roll game. I don't know that it's a super long-term concern, because clearly Wall's contract, thankfully, does not run beyond Christian Wood's current deal. But at the same time, it does tie in, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this in the third and final segment. But in regards to the super long-term view of the Rockets, one of the things that really concerns me, and we've discussed Christian Wood before, but how do you get him to buy in? What happens if the 48% pans out and you don't get a Cade Cunningham or Jalen Suggs, someone around along those lines, which, even though they're not going to upgrade your team a ton immediately because they're rookies, at least at that point, there'd be a reason to clearly believe in a better tomorrow, that you're building towards something. Whereas if that doesn't work out, and we saw from the Aaron Gordon trade negotiations, it's not just that, oh, the Rockets had to have Aaron Gordon. No, it's that even a guy who's clearly not a ring chaser, 25 years old, clearly did not want to be in Houston. And it's that makes it tougher, even though the Rockets do have all of this trade capital with all these future draft picks. It's tougher than it seems to bring in an acquisition of significance, because acquisitions, you know, guys of significance have an ability many times to sort of block trades, because many times they're only available via trade because they're coming up close to the end of their contract. And if they make it clear they're not willing to re-sign in Houston, then you can scuttle deals the way that Gordon did. And so the reason I say that, we know that it's basically a 50-50 shot whether they get a true top four pick in this draft. Now, they will have three first-round picks regardless, but if none of them are high picks, they're all just sort of lottery tickets at that point. And it's going to be tough for them to make a trade acquisition of significance, especially if they don't have a Cade Cunningham to sort of be a lure to guys. And in terms of cap space, they could have some, but not exactly a ton. Then what is it that really sells Christian Wood on this being the spot? The good news, he is just 25, about to turn 26, and he's still sort of developing himself. So it's not like, I don't think he'll be like James Harden with 2 years left trying to push the envelope. I mean, I think you could buy until the final year of the contract and keep him open-minded given the circumstances. But at some point over the next, I would say, at least 12 months, you need to make something, be it organic growth from guys like KPJ or ideally a big-time acquisition of a draft pick or a trade or a combination of those things, to get Christian Wood to buy in. Because the status quo right now, yeah, he's understandably frustrated, and it's tough to see how it gets better in the short term.
Yeah, understandably frustrating would be John Wall, not Christian Wood. So with that, I think that's probably a good spot, you know, because I do want to focus on some of the silver linings for this team moving forward. And we're going to get there after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Look, we've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, great tasting protein bar. They have 100% chocolate on all of their bars. They've got amazing flavors down the lineup. You really can't go wrong with any single one of them. But now it is time to find out which Built Bar is the best Built Bar. It is Built Bar Madness. There is no head-to-head matchup today, but you can go to their website, builtbar.com, and check out all the previous matchups and be ready to continue voting for your favorite Built Bar. You can also cast your votes on Twitter at @bar_built. And when you're heading to the website, remember to use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your very next order. Again, that's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your very next order at builtbar.com. And be sure to check back to see who won previous matchups and who is ultimately going to be the best tasting protein bar. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Rockets Wire editor Ben Dubose. So Ben, you know, we're looking at this team and, you know, there are still some silver linings. You know, I highlighted the fact that now that Victor Oladipo is out of the way, it does clear the runway for more Kevin Porter Jr. minutes once he is back and healthy in the Rockets lineup. I still have reservations about how that actually looks, assuming that he becomes the starting two guard alongside John Wall in the Rockets backcourt moving forward. But that's kind of TBD at this point. But so we've got Kevin Porter Jr.'s development to look forward to. We've got obviously the draft right around the corner, you know, at the end of this season, which is it feels kind of monumental that we've fallen from grace so quickly to where Rockets fans are pinning their hopes on this draft where there's only a 52% chance to retain the pick, which is almost like setting yourself up for massive disappointment, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, but I do look at it as, if they are able to retain their pick, and I know that's the big if, right, a 52% chance, but if they do that, I think they are poised for a quick turnaround rather than some elongated rebuild, you know, the likes of the Knicks or the Kings, because getting a top prospect like that, especially in a draft that's this loaded with talent, any of the top guys would be able to, you know, be a mainstay in a Rockets jersey for years to come, knock on wood, as long as they actually pan out. I really feel like if they're able to do that, then I was never on the you know, wagon of expecting these draft picks from the Brooklyn trade to come to fruition. I kind of assumed, and I feel like you're in this same boat, that they're probably never going to actually, you know, happen, and that they'll probably be packaged to acquire that next, you know, disgruntled star, whoever that may be, to pair with Christian Wood and the Rockets' young core. And I think if you have a top four talent from the lottery to, you know, be under club control on a relatively team friendly deal, you know, versus their actual production level, pairing that with bringing in a monster, an impact player via trade, I think that really does set the Rockets up to be in a position where we're looking at a 2 to 3 year turnaround rather than some five plus year, you know, losing franchise mentality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear from the fact that, you know, I mentioned in the last segment the Aaron Gordon pursuit. I think certainly Gordon turning down the Rockets says some things, but the fact that they pursued him in the first place really should tell you that they are not looking to maximize draft odds for a five-year period. They want to turn this thing around sooner rather than later, and I think the best way to frame it is that the Rockets need to change the narrative. That's the thing that's most important. It's not just the results on the floor, it's the accelerated decline that we've been talking about it with the organization as a whole, obviously the historic nature of the 20 game losing streak, and the fact that right now there's not much in the way of a tangible reason to buy in. There's reasons that you can have hope, especially if you're a Rockets fan and you squint pretty hard, but in terms of the landscape of the NBA overall, it's easy to understand why people are sort of down on this franchise, especially given that the front office and ownership is largely unproven. So to me, the way the Rockets need to be, and I think they already are framing this, is they need to maximize things that are going to change perception, because it's not about just accumulating top prospects. This is not an Oklahoma City rebuild where you're just going to make all these picks and just hope that some of them pan out. No, Houston believes, I think they're right, it's one of the biggest NBA markets. It's a franchise that's been known over the years for being very player friendly, especially the stars. I think that's another reason why they sent Oladipo to Miami, even though there were possibly better deals elsewhere. They get sort of the credit from players, and especially agents, for doing right by the player. He wanted to be there, just like James Harden wanted to be in Brooklyn. We heard after the fact, James Harden has said nothing but good things about the Rockets front office and ownership since the trade. So there is value in that, but all of that tells you that they are not just going to wait around for years and try to draft high and hope that 5 years from now they just have an overwhelming amount of talent and that some of them hit. No, they're trying to get back as soon as possible. They just need something that's going to sort of change the narrative. And certainly a top four pick would be the easiest way to do that. Even if Cade Cunningham or Jalen Suggs doesn't upgrade your team a ton immediately, because they're rookies and it's unfair to expect them to do that much. Just look at Anthony Edwards with the Timberwolves. Now, granted, I know that Anthony Edwards, the top pick in the 2020 draft, is nowhere near as good on paper as the top picks in 2021. But the point is, the Timberwolves have a lot of young talent between Cat and Edwards, and yet they still have the league's worst record. So that should remind you that it takes some time. With that said, if you have a Cade Cunningham type under contract for 4 years, and you combine him with Christian Wood, who, by the way, is going to be healthier next year. Right now, he is still a little bit limited by the ankle. I think that's clear. And then if you have Kevin Porter Jr. potentially taking some strides, I agree with you that him starting as a two guard, it could be a little dicey if he continues to shoot so poorly from three, because teams will just sag off, and we've seen the zones that have had so much success against the Rockets. The case for optimism, I saw a stat on Twitter, I think Nathan Fogg pointed it out, that the Rockets have Porter shooting 50% when he's on the floor with Christian Wood, 40% otherwise. So I think when you have the role threat of Christian Wood alongside Kevin Porter, that could potentially help give him a little bit more room to operate. And if he can just get his threes back up to where he was a year ago in Cleveland, he was like 33-point-something, which isn't great, but it's good enough to where teams can't give him the Russell Westbrook treatment, then maybe he'll be okay. But I think that's sort of the priority. In the short term, hope that Christian Wood works back to health and is the guy that he's been for most of this year. Hope that Kevin Porter Jr. has some games down the stretch that really sort of catches attention and makes people think the same way they were after the Utah game, that he could be special. And more than those things, though, of course, is the draft pick. You get that type of guy in there and then have Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood really clicking, then all of a sudden I think you can be in a much better spot where not just the Aaron Gordon tier, but really anyone that's potentially thinking about moving on for one reason or another could consider the Rockets. So I think that's sort of the way to think. It's not just wins and losses. It's about changing the narrative. What is going to happen that can truly make the Rockets a more desirable destination for players around the league? That, more than anything, is, I think, the way the franchise is thinking of this. And it just so happens right now that losing games is a means to that end, because, of course, it maximizes your odds of getting a Cade Cunningham type player.
Ben, I need you to significantly up your Jay Sean Tate hype, because you haven't mentioned his name once
fair.
With the young core for the Rockets. No, I it's fine. But you know, he's as, you know, as important as a part of that core, you know, Christian Wood, Jay Sean Tate, Kevin Porter Jr., and even KJ Martin, who's shown some flashes. You know, the Rockets have some young, exciting talent on the roster. And I completely agree with the stat that you brought up, you know, as pointed out by Nathan Fogg, that my reservations with Kevin Porter Jr. coming off the bench originally in the couple games that he did before being sidelined due to injury, when backing up, you know, Wall, Victor Oladipo, that kind of situation, was that he wasn't getting proper reps with Christian Wood, you know, because of the way that lineups were being staggered. And I think for his development and his growth, is it's important for him to get those reps with Wood. And it really felt like in the minutes where we saw Christian Wood and Kevin Porter Jr. share the floor, it really looks like KPJ goes out of his way to try and over-facilitate maybe at times for Christian Wood, trying to get him involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a nice change of scenery from John Wall, who we feel like isn't doing enough of that. So hopefully we get to see that dynamic moving forward. But I want to end on one more question for you, Ben, about the draft. And this is going to be my new favorite question moving forward. But Rockets land number 2 overall pick. Who are you taking?
So I'm in the minority because I know there's a lot of Mobley hype, but I'm taking Suggs just because, number one, I believe in Christian Wood as your center. I do think that when you're drafting, it's not just about the overall value. Like, I think
you believe in fit as part of the draft.
Fit has to be considered because you're keeping that piece. When you draft that high, you know, I'm typically a big best asset available guy, but that's because, especially with where the Rockets are now, it's not just about the fit on the floor. It's about what is the eventual trade equity of those guys. What can that get you? Whereas when you're drafting, if you're number 2 overall, you're thinking about that guy as a cornerstone. And to me, Suggs has, and you'll get to see him a lot because I don't think Gonzaga is going to lose to Creighton in the Sweet 16, so they have at least 2 more games left, in my opinion, probably a lot more than that. I think he has similar upside, but I think it's just a lot more seamless fit with the Christian Wood era Rockets than Mobley would be. I believe in Christian Wood. I've made that clear, that finding a way to sort of keep him around long-term, keep him satisfied. I think he can truly be the second or third best player on a contending team. I really believe that. So I would go with the fit that, in my opinion, is a little bit better with Christian Wood. And to me, that's Jalen Suggs. Not saying that I would 100% draft on fit. I'm just saying it's different than what, you know, we're in very much an asset accumulation mode right now because so few of the pieces that the Rockets pick up are we willing to say, you know what, this guy is clearly going to be a part of the formula for the next championship contender in Houston. You sort of have to have a flexible approach. Whereas if you're lucky enough to draft number 2 overall or really anywhere in the top 4, that player is a part of your formula. Full stop. You're drafting for that guy to be a part of your next contender, especially in a draft that's as top heavy as this one. So I lean Suggs because of the fit.
So my main takeaway from this, Ben, is that if you were in charge of the Sacramento Kings, you also would have taken Marvin Bagley.
Whew. No, did not say that, but I can understand the thought process.
I'm just poking fun.
I know.
Poking fun.
Well, and the other thing too, though, in defense of that, I will say that based on where the NBA is going, I will say that you have more flexibility if it's a non-center. Like, you know, when you're looking at what the Rockets are doing now, of course they're not trying to contend, but there's a reason why they think they can play, and we've heard Stephen Silas say this, you know, 2 out of John Wall, DJ Augustine, and Kevin Porter Jr. at once. And by the way, in the short term, I'd love to see them play DJ Augustine more in the closing lineups to have a true floor general out there, you know, just to sort of offset the temptation for John Wall to go hero ball at times, which totally mucks up the offense. But yeah, the point is, even if you have like guards or forwards in place, I think you can easily add another one. So while, you know, I'm not super optimistic about Mobley and Christian Wood together, that does not give, say, the Sacramento Kings a pass for taking Marvin Bagley, because it's a lot easier to play guards together than it is a big man. So I would say that's especially why I'm a little bit of a down, you know, not really down on Mobley as a prospect, just down on the fit in Houston, because even with regards to positions, it's especially difficult to have 2 centers and to make that work.
That's fair. For what it's worth, I've asked this question twice now. The first time I asked it was in the greatest podcast that will never be heard because of technical issues, unfortunately.
Oh,
but Ali Kambijani actually took Mobley 2nd overall. He's okay. Very high on Mobley and actually is very intrigued by the potential fit of Mobley alongside Christian Wood in a Rockets jersey. So I found that pretty interesting. So this is going to be my new favorite question moving forward in these pods. But Ben, really appreciate you taking the time to hang out today. Go ahead and you know the drill, man.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for having me. And of course, Twitter at Ben Dubose, at the Rockets Wire, and rocketswire.usatoday.com is the website.
And that is going to do it for today's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.